we remember back in the early part of the millennium when Madeleine Albright, then Secretary of State, was asked if the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children were worth U.S. sanctions. And she said, yes, it was. That's the U.S. attitude. The U.S. government does not care about the suffering of people.
Iran managed to produce vaccines despite being under cruel U.S. sanctions. The sanctions seriously undermined Iran's ability to battle the pandemic.
Iran could certainly have dealt with this this pandemic much better than it was able to had the illegal and unjust sanctions not been issued. But Donald Trump issued them, violating international law and U.S. law by doing so when he violated the JCPOA. And the United States once again has blood on its hands, this time blood of innocent Iranians who would have been able to get the vaccine had the sanctions not existed.
The cruel and illegal sanctions denied Iran access to crucial raw material and necessary equipment.
A controversial photo taken at the Russian embassy in Tehran has angered Iranians. The picture posted online by the Russian embassy this week has drawn widespread criticism and growing calls for an official apology. The controversial photo depicts Russian Ambassador Levan Jagarian and his British counterpart Simon Shercliffe sitting on the porch of the embassy with a third empty chair. It clearly echoes a photo taken in 1943 of Allied leaders Joseph Stalin, Winston Churchill, and U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt at exactly the same location. The Allied leaders met at the Tehran conference to coordinate strategy against Nazi Germany. At the time, Iran was occupied by Russian and British forces, despite its neutrality in the Second World War. The 1943 conference at the Russian embassy is seen by many Iranians as a violation of Iran's sovereignty and independence. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif led a chorus of sharp criticism, describing the photo as, quote, extremely inappropriate. On Thursday, Iran's foreign ministry summoned the British and Russian envoys over the release of the picture online. The envoys were told at the ministry that the posting was totally unacceptable. The Russian and British diplomats insist that no harm was intended and that the picture was a tribute to the fight against Nazi Germany. Other Iranian officials and people were quick to denounce the photo. Iran's Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf censored the meeting between the Russian and UK ambassadors as, quote, inappropriate and inconsistent with diplomatic protocols, urging the foreign ministry to follow up on the case. Ghalibaf said both ambassadors must swiftly issue an official apology, otherwise firm diplomatic action will be necessary. Foreign Minister-designate Hossein Amir Abdullahian joined the chorus of critics on Thursday. The top diplomat said the picture, quote, showed disregard for diplomatic etiquette and the national pride of the Iranian people. Faced with widespread criticism, the Russian ambassador tweeted that the photo does not have any anti-Iranian context. The envoy said that he is not going to offend the feelings of the friendly Iranian people. The British ambassador retweeted his Russian counterpart's comments. The controversy triggered by the photo is still under the spotlight. Some observers believe an official apology could help end the controversy.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. the limelight.
Nearly two full decades of lies and wishful thinking from U.S. generals, politicians, liberal interventionists, and neoconservative talking heads came into full view as the Taliban in Afghanistan surrounded Kabul, says John Quayle, journalist, in an article published under the heading, After 20 Years of Lies and War, U.S. Retreat Underway as Taliban Retake Control of Afghanistan. Stay tuned for more. Nearly two full decades of lies and wishful thinking from U.S. generals, politicians, liberal interventionists, and neoconservative talking heads came into full view as the Taliban in Afghanistan surrounded Kabul while American military forces and diplomatic personnel rapidly evacuated the U.S. embassy and the Afghan government of President Ashraf Ghani negotiated a surrender and transition government with opposition forces. With reports that Bagram Air Base and nearby Parwan prison had both fallen out of Afghan government hands, Taliban spokesperson Sohail Shaheen told the reporters that his group expects a peaceful transfer of power within days and assured the people of Afghanistan, including those in Kabul, that retribution and revenge would not follow. Shaheen said, We assure the people in Afghanistan, particularly in the city of Kabul, that their properties, their lives are safe. There will be no revenge on anyone. The Taliban leadership, Shaheen continued, has instructed forces to remain at the gates of Kabul and that they had no plans yet to enter the city. They said, We are awaiting a peaceful transfer of power. Asked to explain what a peaceful transfer of power means in practice, he said, It means that the city and the power should be handed over to Emirate of Afghanistan and then in the future we will have an Afghan inclusion government in which all Afghans will have participation. A press statement issued from the Taliban echoed that message, urging Afghans not to flee their own country and vowing that both their lives and property would not be threatened. Subsequently, amid reports that President Ghani have already left the country, Interior Minister Abdul Sattar Mirzakhwel announced a peaceful transfer of power had been agreed to and that a transitional government was being formed. The Afghan people should not worry, Mirzakhwel said in a recorded speech according to Agence France-Presse, adding, The safety of Kabul is guaranteed. There will be no attack on the city, and the agreement is such that the transition of power will take place in a peaceful manner. In recent days, anti-war voices who opposed the initial invasion in 2001 and have railed against the U.S. occupation ever since have pointed out the inevitability of what is now unfolding, the rapid return of Taliban rule despite 20 years, during which trillions of dollars were spent and hundreds of thousands of innocent lives were lost, of U.S. military leaders claiming that some kind of victory was possible. The tragic events unfolding in Afghanistan are yet further proof of the utter failure of the country's endless wars and the mindset that enables them, said Stephen Miles, executive director of the U.S.-based group Win Without War, recently. He added, nearly two decades of military intervention and occupation did not build lasting peace. No number of bombs dropped, no length of time occupied would have. On Sunday, August 15th, veteran peace activist Mirya Benjamin was among those wondering who, anyone in the U.S. military or foreign policy establishment, would ever be held accountable for the deceit or failures in Afghanistan. Benjamin asked on social media, who is going to be fired for 20 years of horrific failure in Afghanistan? Who would you suggest? In a separate morning tweet, Benjamin said, as the blame game for the Afghan crisis heats up, I want to add all who supported this disastrous invasion from the beginning, including those who bashed us at anti-war protest. We were right, you were wrong. We should have never invaded Afghanistan, period. Lindsey German, convener of U.S.-based Stop the War Coalition, said in a statement recently, the whole war on terror has proved a terrible failure, and this should be admitted. We should also consider how the lives of Afghans would have been improved if only a fraction of the money committed to this war had gone into improving their lives through investment in infrastructure, housing, education, agriculture. German said, that was an opportunity that could have been taken, but was ignored in favor of military solutions, and those have brought us to where we are today. With a massive U.S. evacuation operation underway, the United Nations warned recently of the potential for a massive refugee crisis, as many Afghans not assured they will be safe or unwilling to live under Taliban rule try to leave the country. On Friday, August 13th, the U.N. Refugee Agency, UNHCR, called on neighboring countries to keep their borders open in light of the intensifying crisis and warned that the inability to seek safety may risk innumerable civilian lives. The UNHCR said it was standing ready to help counties scale up their humanitarian and assistance efforts as needed. In a statement issued by the White House on Saturday, August 14th, Joe Biden said while he had mobilized approximately 5,000 U.S. troops to provide security and assist with the evacuation of Afghanistan, he was not considering changing course to maintain the occupation of the country, which has been ongoing since 2001. Biden said, I was the fourth president to preside over an American troop presence in Afghanistan, two Republicans, two Democrats. I would not and will not pass this war into the fifth.
Qom, Iranian sacred city. Part 1.
Qom province, with an area of nearly 15,000 square kilometers, occupying less than 1% of the entire territory of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The province is linked to Tehran province in the north, to Saveh, Tafresh, Ashtian, and Dilijan in Markazi province in the south. It lies to the southeast of Isfahan, and from the east to Kabir Valley and Namak Lake. About one-fifth of the province is covered with mountains and foothills, with the remaining four-fifths a large valley or basin. The holy city of Qom is situated in the center of the province, close to the surrounding towns of Salafjagan, Khalajistan, Kahak, and Jafariyeh.
Given its historic structures, discoveries of artifacts, and the recordings of historical documents, Qom was a reputable and relatively large city in the pre-Islamic era. When Islam was introduced to Iran, Qom developed rapidly and became semi-autonomous during the sovereign reign of the Bani Umayyad and Bani Abbas caliphates. Qom is home to the heavenly court, the historic mausoleum and shrine of Hazrat Ma'sumeh, also known as Fatimeh Ma'sumeh, the daughter of Imam Musa Kazim, the seventh Imam of Shia Islam. Hazrat Ma'sumeh is revered by Muslims worldwide, and so her resting place being in Qom lifted the dignity and status of the city and conferred religious significance upon it. Among the other notable tourist attractions in the province are the Holy Jamkaran Mosque and more than 400 other Imamzades, offspring of imams, shrines, seminaries, theological schools, historically important mosques such as Friday, Imam Hassan, Babul Jannah, and Rafat, educational and international institutes, and Qomrud Lake. When the 7th Abbasid Caliph Ma'mun invited Imam Reza to Marv, Hazrat Ma'sumeh moved to Iran in the company of a number of Shia Muslims to meet with and join Imam Reza. But just outside Qom, she was taken ill. In her 80s at the time, she was bedridden in Qom for 17 days before she passed away. Her body was buried in a well-respected place in the city of Bagh Babylon. Today, Bagh Babylon is famous because of Hazrat Ma'sumeh's shrine that houses a magnificent monument. This stately edifice is one of the most important religious shrines of the Islamic world. The original shrine was built in the middle of the 3rd century Islam and was expanded substantially between the 4th and 6th centuries when a dome and artwork were added to it. Qom Azam Mosque, located right next to Hazrat Ma'sumeh's mausoleum, is the city's Azam Mosque, known widely as Ayatollah Burujerdi's Azam Mosque. It was built in 1918 through the efforts of Sayyid Hossein Tabotabai Burujerdi. The architect of this splendid monument was a man named Hossein Lorzadeh. It is classified among the three largest veranda mosques. Its dome stands at 24 meters high. Today, the mosque is the Qom Seminary's most important teaching center. The mosque is now merged with Hazrat Ma'sumeh's shrine. Recently, its dome was adorned with large thin flakes of lusterware, donated and produced under the supervision of Haj Hassan Jaber Ansari. The Tabotabai Mosque, spearheaded by Hujjatul Islam Agha Muhammad Tabotabai, the son of Ayatollah Haj Agha Hussein Qomi, A great mosque with an elevated dome was built adjacent to Hazrat Masum's mausoleum. Famously known as the Tabo Taboi Mosque, it was built between 1981 and 1991. In the 10th century Islamic era, Shah Tahmasp Safavi used bricks to build the first sepulchre on the mosque. Sometime later, an additional sepulchre made of transparent white steel was installed around the original sepulchre and a wooden door was fitted in the northern frontage. In the 13th century Islamic era, Fath Ali Shah Qajar replaced this door with a luxurious golden door. He also upgraded the sepulchre by having it coated with layers of silver and installed on a malachite pillar. With time, the sepulchre lost its radiance, so in the 14th century in Islamic era, it was again renovated. Finally, in 1973, the form of the sepulchres was altered and its height increased. Fath Ali Shah Qajar had the shrine flagstone with marble. He believed the spiritual gusts around Hazrat Masum's shrine has to step on the best of stones. Atiq Courtyard. In the 10th century in the Islamic era, Shah Begum Khatun, the daughter of Shah Ismail Safavi, built a square-form courtyard with three verandas. Later, Fath Ali Shah had it remodeled into an irregular octagonal shape. This octagonal form is said to have been built on the memorial of Imam Reza Thaman al-Hujjaj, the brother of this holy woman, pointing to the fact that Imam Reza was the 8th Shia Imam. Gradually, the number of verandas in the courtyard increased. At the moment, it has 7 of them, 4 on the south side and 3 on the north. The verandas of the Atiq courtyard are the most famous within this court. They were built on the order of Shah Begum and gilded during the reign of Fath Ali Shah Qajar. They constitute the entrance of the heavenly courtyard. Atop each veranda, a hadith inscription in white thulf is displayed on an azure background. Above it, a myriad of tiles and inscriptions. Thank you. Imam Khomeini Great Sanctuary. It is one of the greatest architectural feats after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, featuring a multitude of porches, entrances, and other facilities. Called Balasar, Overhead Mosque, it is situated nearby and overhead to Hazrat Masumeh's shrine. That's where it draws its name. In the Safavid period, it served as a motel. Inside the shrine and next to the holy tomb of Hazrat Masumeh, a mausoleum houses the eternal resting places of grand ayatollahs, scholars, and outstanding scientific and religious figures, the largest grouping of revered Muslims anywhere, particularly in the Shia world. Qom is called Darul Aman. Some of the renowned and compassionate scholars buried in the mausoleum here are Allames Tabatabai, Khansari, Golpayegani, and Bahjat. Martyr of love and writing and eminent ideologist Murtaza Mutahhari is also buried here. In the INM mirror courtyard of the Holy Shrine lies the mausoleum of freedom crusader Sheikh Fazlullah Nuri, born in 1843 and killed in 1909. Sheikh Nuri's memorial is symbolic among the liberal crusaders of constitutionalism. This is the tomb of martyr Ayatollah Dr. Mufatteh. He was born in 1889 and martyred in 1939. The Faizia Theological School was founded in the Middle Ages of Islamic history and is located in Qom next to Hazrat Masumeh Shrine in Astan-e-Muqaddase, Holy Threshold Square. It was registered as a national heritage in 2007. Astan-e School was replaced by Faizia School in the first half of the 13th Islamic century. According to valid historical documents, the school was established in the middle of the 6th Islamic century and was renovated in the Safavid era. The two-story building features four verandas. The 40 chambers on the first floor were built in the Qajar period, and the other 40 on the second floor were built in the 14th Islamic century. The oldest part of the seminary is where the southern veranda is and is decorated with beautiful tiles belonging to the Safavid era of 1939 AH. It is regarded as the gateway to the Atir courtyard and Hazrat Masumeh's shrine. The Darul Shifa Theological School is attached to Faizia Seminary. It was founded in the beginning of the Qajar period. Originally, it was called Fath Ali Shah School. Kamran Mirza Qajar had its entrance renovated and its chambers refurbished. Since then, it has been called Darul Shafa. The building lay in ruins, but was renovated after the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The seminary now has 200 chambers and a modern conference hall. The house of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini is located in Shafaiye district of Qom. It's about 100 years old. Imam Khomeini purchased it in 1956. He lived here till 1963. Eventually, in 1994, it was donated to the house of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by his now deceased son, Sayyid Ahmad Khomeini. It was registered as a national heritage in 1996 by the Iranian Cultural Heritage Organization.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Emerging data suggests that Delta could spread more readily than other coronavirus variants among people vaccinated against COVID-19. But key questions remain. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Nidhi Soberman, writer. This article is published under the heading, How Do Vaccinated People Spread Delta? What science says. Stay tuned for more. When early field data showed that vaccinating people caught transmission of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, researchers were cautiously optimistic. But they warned that many of those studies, although promising, took place before the fast-spreading Delta variant proliferated worldwide. Now reports from various counties seem to confirm what scientists feared after the variant tore through India with alarming speed in April and May. Delta is more likely than other variants to spread through vaccinated people. Data from COVID-19 tests in the United States, the United Kingdom, and Singapore are showing that vaccinated people who become infected with Delta SARS-CoV-2 can carry as much virus in their nose as do unvaccinated people. This means that despite the protection offered by vaccines, a proportion of vaccinated people can pass on Delta, possibly aiding its rise. People who have a Delta virus and happen to have breakthrough infections can carry these really high levels of virus and can unwittingly spread the virus to others, says David O'Connor, a virologist at the University of Wisconsin Madison. The findings underscore the importance of protective measures such as wearing masks indoors to reduce transmission. Researchers stress that COVID-19 vaccines are protective against serious illnesses and death. But the data on Delta transmission show that people who are vaccinated still need to take precautions, O'Connor says. O'Connor and colleagues at the Madison and Dane County Health Department looked at infections in Wisconsin in June and July. The team used PCR tests, which are widely used to confirm COVID-19 infections, to estimate the concentration of virus in nasal fluid samples. The tests detect the virus genetic material by amplifying DNA until it is detectable as a fluorescent signal. The number of amplification cycles needed to get a signal, a measure called the cycle threshold value or CT, serves as a proxy for viral concentration in the sample. The lower a sample CT, the more viral genetic material present. In a preprint study published on MedRxiv on August 11th, the researchers compared CT values for 719 people between June 29th and July 31st, during which 90% of the 122 coronavirus samples they sequenced were the Delta variant. Of the 311 vaccinated people who tested positive for SARS-CoV-2 in that group, most had CT values of less than 25, a level at which researchers expect the presence of infectious SARS-CoV-2. To confirm this, the team cultured 55 samples that had CT values less than 25 from vaccinated and unvaccinated people and detected infectious virus in nearly everyone. Most unvaccinated people also had CT values below this level. The bottom line is, this can happen. It can be true that vaccinated people can spread the virus, but we do not yet know what their relative role in overall community spread is, says co-author Thomas Friedrich, a virologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Data from Provincetown, Massachusetts suggests similar findings. An August report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, showed that following large gatherings in Beach Town, nearly three-quarters of 469 new COVID-19 cases that occurred in the state were in vaccinated people. Both vaccinated and unvaccinated people had comparably low CT values, indicating high viral loads, and of the 133 samples sequenced, 90% were identified as Delta. The findings prompted the CDC to update its guidance on July 27th and once again recommend that people in areas of high transmission wear masks indoors. The Provincetown results were linked to big gatherings, but Wisconsin didn't have similar activities, suggesting that the small household gatherings could also help Delta to spread, Friedrich says. In Houston, Texas, where a Houston Methodist Hospital team has been sequencing and logging SARS-CoV-2 variants for almost every COVID-19 case in the hospital system. About 17% of Delta cases are in vaccinated people since March 2021, nearly three times the rate of breakthrough infections compared with all other variants combined. Patients with Delta SARS-CoV-2 also stayed in hospital slightly longer than did people infected with other variants. James Musser, a molecular pathologist and director of the Hospital Center for Molecular and Transnational Human Infectious Diseases Research, said there is potentially a slightly different biology to the infection. His team found that CT levels were similar in vaccinated and unvaccinated people. However, vaccinated people with Delta might remain infectious for a shorter period, according to researchers in Singapore, who tracked viral loads for each day of COVID-19 infection among people who had and hadn't been vaccinated. Delta viral loads were similar for both groups for the first week of infection, but dropped quickly after day 7 in vaccinated people. Given the high virus levels seen in the first week of illness with Delta, measures such as masks and hand hygiene, which can reduce transmission, are important for everyone, regardless of vaccination status, says co-author Barnaby Young, an infectious disease clinician at the National Center for Infectious Diseases in Singapore. One massive analysis of Delta transmission comes from the UK, led by a team at Imperial College London, which tests more than 100,000 UK volunteers every few weeks. The team ran CT analysis of samples received in May, June, and July, when Delta was rapidly replacing other variants to become the dominant driver of COVID-19 in the country. The results suggested that among people testing positive, those who had been vaccinated had a lower viral load on average than did unvaccinated people. Paul Elliott, an epidemiologist at Imperial, says that these results differ from other CT studies because this study sampled the population at random and included people who tested positive without showing symptoms. These findings, along with an increase in cases in younger people who have not yet received both jabs, underscore the effectiveness of double vaccination against Delta, Elliott says. We think it's really, really important to get as many people double vaccinated, and particularly those younger groups, as soon as possible.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
September 19th, 2018. 50 years after the passing away of the Prophet, everything changed. The name of Islam remained, the word Islam persisted. However, in reality, true Islam was no longer practiced. Instead of the government of justice, a government of oppression was established again. Instead of fraternity and equality, discrimination, division, and separation reigned. Instead of wisdom, ignorance ruled. During this period of 50 years, as we move on, we can find hundreds of examples of such cases. Researchers are recommended to elaborate on them for the young and investigative minds. Imamate was transformed into the kingdom. The essence of imamate is contradictory to the essence of the kingdom. These two are contradictory. Imamate is moral and spiritual leadership and compassionate and belief-related bonds with the people. Whereas a kingdom is ruling via coercion, power and deluding without any spiritual compassion and belief-related bonds. The two are binary opposites.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana la chan.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
Imamate is a movement among the Ummah, for the Ummah and in favor of rightfulness. A kingdom is an authoritarian dominance against the interests of the people, only serving particular classes of society to fulfill the ruling group's hoarding wealth and pleasing lust. What we see at the time of Imam Hussein's uprising is the second case, not the first one. That is, Yazid, who was in power then, had no relations with the people. He had no knowledge, no piety, no chastity, no experience of jihad for the cause of God, no belief in Islamic spirituality. His behavior was not a behavior of a believer in Islam. His words were not the words of a wise man. He was in no way similar to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. In this situation, an opportunity rose for a person like Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the Imam who was apt for succeeding the Prophet, peace be upon him, and he rose up. Looking at the surface of the events, this uprising was against the corrupt and unpopular regime of Yazid. However, beneath the surface, it is an uprising for the sake of Islamic values, understanding, faith, and dignity.
Today, 9th of Muharram, is the day of Tasawwa, the day before the heartrending tragedy of Karbala. We hear here at Arabi English Radio express our heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on the occasion of Tasawwa.
Around the world with reporters.
Washington's so-called war on terror has failed in Afghanistan as the Taliban are now back after 20 years of fighting against the US-led forces. The militants entered Kabul with facing almost no resistance. Afghan ousted President Ashraf Ghani fled the country, saying he left Afghanistan because he wanted to avoid bloodshed.
I congratulate this great victory and the entire Muslim nation of Afghanistan, particularly the honorable residents of Kabul and our Mujahideen. We didn't expect such a fast victory, but we gained it by the help of God. I also assure all our countrymen of their safety. Don't be scared and resume your normal life.
As facts on the ground show, the Taliban are trying to gain popularity among all as a move to help them strengthen their rule over the country. They say their agenda is to provide security for all Afghans, including women and minorities, who have suffered decades of invasion, war, injustice, and insecurity. The fall of capital Kabul has created a big question in the minds of rural Afghans. That is, how can the Taliban bring unity, improvement, and lasting peace to gain public support in the country?
We are tired of war and ask the Taliban to prove how they are planning to gain people's trust and support the rule over the country.
The fall of Kabul has prompted many Afghans to leave their country for fear of their life. Reports say at least 5 people were killed in the airport as Afghans scrambled to flee. According to eyewitnesses, American troops repeatedly shot in the air to dispel the crowds. Video released on social media showed dozens of people running alongside a U.S. plane as it taxied along the runway before takeoff. Afghanistan's Civil Aviation Authority says that the airspace had been released to the military and advised transit flights to reroute, saying there would be no air traffic control. Most countries have begun to evacuate their citizens along with diplomatic staff, with the U.S. planning to deploy more troops in Afghanistan to hasten its evacuation. Hundreds of Afghans, including those in possession of visas, have rushed into Kabul International Airport to get a flight and flee the country. This proves that the hope and optimism of Afghans on the fate of their country have smashed due to what most have believed is the outcome of heavy U.S. military presence in the country over the past 2 decades. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
On Sunday, August 15, 2021, India celebrated its 75th Independence Day. In Indian-administered Kashmir, the main event to mark the day was held in the region's capital city, Srinagar. The region's Lieutenant Governor Manoj Sinha unfurled the national flag and took salute from the parade. The event was largely attended by government functionaries. The region's officials had temporarily relaxed COVID restrictions for Independence Day.
Revocation of Article 370 marked the beginning of a new era for Jammu and Kashmir. A neighboring country which does not care for its own people has been making malicious attempts to instigate our youth. They will be given a befitting reply.
While the mood inside the stadium was ecstatic, outside the people observed spontaneous shutdown to protest what they call New Delhi's failure to address the wishes and aspirations of the people. They say that New Delhi's stripping of Kashmir's special status in 2019 has further alienated the people of Kashmir.
Independence Day is important for every nation and those who are celebrating independence on 15th August or 14th August across the border. They must realize that Kashmiris too have aspiration and this aspiration must be respected.
The authorities had heightened security, deployed sharpshooters and pressed drones into service to keep watch over the region's capital city and prevent any attack by the armed pro-independence groups. They also issued directions to heads of educational institutes to hoist the Indian flag at their respective schools. The order has drawn strong criticism from different quarters. Meanwhile, unlike the past, internet and mobile services have remained unaffected on the Independence Day in Kashmir. Kashmir is a bone of contention between India and Pakistan. Both the nations claim the region in full, but rule it in parts.
As India celebrates its 75th Independence Day, life here in Kashmir has again come to a grinding halt. Observers believe unless New Delhi addresses the basic issue of Kashmir and reduces the trust deficit, it cannot win the hearts and minds of the people here. Said Ali Safir, Indian administered Kashmir.
Palestinians took part in a rally in the Gaza Strip marking the 20th anniversary of the killing of Abu Ali Mustafa, the leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Abu Ali Mustafa was assassinated in an Israeli attack in Ramallah in 2001. Palestinians said they participated in this rally to renew their support for the Palestinian resistance, expressing they will continue the road of resistance in defending their rights.
Today, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine is marking the 20th anniversary of the assassination of our leader, Abu Ali Mustafa. By holding this huge rally titled With Knowledge and Resistance, we will build the next generation of freedom and victory. We view the resistance as the only way out of the current crisis. We have many allies from Iran to Syria, Lebanon and Al-Quds, which stand against the Israeli regime.
This rally comes in conjunction with the Resistance Front warning it won't tolerate any more Israel's reluctance to meet Palestinians' demands, especially those related to ending the suffocating siege imposed on the Gaza Strip.
Today, all Palestinian resistance factions are marking Abu Ali Mustafa's assassination, vowing to follow in the footsteps of their leaders. Today, Palestinians are involved in a continuous struggle against Israel, especially in Al-Quds, defending their lands. We call for a unified stance in fight against the occupation.
Organizers said this event marks the ongoing resistance until the main goals of all Palestinians are achieved. Resistance factions renewed their pledge to defend the Palestinian people and sent a new warning to the Israeli regime that the coming generations are the generations of liberation.
We believe that generations after generations will keep resisting against Israeli occupation. The Israeli regime should be held accountable for its crimes and the international community should break its silence towards them.
Palestinians here stress